Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Red Sox win a roller coaster of a game against the Angels to prevent the sweep, scoring 11 runs to the Angels' 9. The Sox elevate their record up to 30 wins, 34 losses. They thankfully have a day off before going to New York to face the Yankees. I'm Nick the Voice, joined by Jim Dolfino and Chris Felico, and we are the Bastards of Boston. And if you want more, you can go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great articles written just about every day. Now, this was a big win for us. None of us, I don't think, expected anything after that Giolito start. After that first inning, we were all in the war room pretty much saying, this game is over. This is going to be an easy sweep. The Red Sox came back, and fortunately, Soriano looked just about as bad as Giolito did, although he did end up lasting longer in the game. He settled down a little bit in the second and the third. But even though this was a win, it was a very ugly one. What stuck out to you guys?
Go ahead, Jim.
So here's the first thing. Giolito's had a roller coaster of a starting season for this team. There's been a couple good outings, and there's been some that were just atrocious. Put this in the atrocious category. 7 earned runs, 8 hits, an inning and 2/3. I don't know where that ranks in the shortest start of his career, but I'm sure it's got to be up there in the top 5. How much longer of a leash can this guy get? I mean, in all seriousness, are you really going to think that you're going to win anything with this guy pumping him out there every 5 days? Because I don't. And I don't even know how he still has been in the rotation at this point. I mean, you know, he doesn't really show like any kind of signs that he's improving. It's just, like I said, a roller coaster with him. So he says after the after the game, during the post game, that he's got to figure it out in so many words. But what is Andrew Bailey doing with him? Is he trying to figure out what is the problem with Lucas Giolito, or is he just cooked? Because as far as I'm concerned, he's cooked, and I don't think he deserves another start. I know he's listed and penciled in, I believe, in the Yankee series, but the reality is that he got bailed out really big time by the bullpen and, you know, for the most part did pretty well, especially Guerrero. But this can't continue every single game that he starts. We have enough trouble with anybody not named Crochet to be able to pitch more than 5 innings. And, you know, I know I wasn't on, but even in that Bayo star, I heard, you know, Dave O'Brien basically, you know, patting him on the back that, oh, you know, he went sick. You're facing the Angels, okay? They're not a good team, all right? And the fact of the matter is that you lost 2 out of 3 to this team, and you had a win. Your only win came because you had a home run in the 9th inning. Which, I'm sorry, if anybody is really happy about this victory, it's fool's gold. It's a fool's gold win. It's a fool's gold home run. Probably 27 other parks, it's a foul ball or it's an out. So to be happy about this win, you've got to be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, well, speaking of the broadcast, I mean, it's like homerism every night now at this point, at nauseam, because they're trying to find like the glass half full in anything at this point in the season, which is even more frustrating. Like, I wish they would just, and I recognize they're not going to, but I wish they would just call out the team. I see plenty of broadcasts and teams that have not been as poor as the Red Sox for as long as they have calling out mediocrity or, you know, crappy results when there's expectations. So that's frustrating itself. And as far as this team being a roller coaster, it is like a roller coaster. It's like a roller coaster in a Final Destination movie. And I'm praying to God that my seatbelt just clips when I get in the damn seat. Because every time you get in, you have no idea which turn am I going to fall out? Am I going to die? We find a new way to lose, to get hurt, to make silly errors, the same errors we've been making for the last three or four freaking seasons at this point. And we make the same mistakes with the lineup. We keep trotting out all these guys that are like AAA players in many different teams, right? But for the Sox, they are starting. And yeah, to your point, Jim, we won the game. But like, did we really win? Did we? Because what does this really do for the team? Thank God that baseball is not football, because if it was, I would be at the point where it's like, just tank for the pick.
Yeah. And, you know, that's really a big thing, is that the tanking is, it never was a big thing in baseball just because the draft is so much more of a crapshoot. But now with the draft lottery, there's nothing to incentivize teams to finish up poorly, you know? And you see the Rockies won a series. They got their 12th win today. That's a big win for them. We're the Red Sox. We really just need to do better. You're right about the homerism. And it's interesting because today, I don't normally catch too much pregame stuff, but I did for this game. And Lou Maloney was on, and he was talking pretty extensively criticizing the Red Sox, which I really like to hear. He was talking about how Bayo was sort of pumped up just because he went six innings, and how it's kind of, you know, I'm going to phrase this a lot more aggressively than he did, obviously, but it's kind of like a Little League celebration. It's a Mickey Mouse celebration. You're down 3-1 leaving the game. You shouldn't be happy about that, but we're sending him out there. This is ultimately a grown man who's been in the MLB for many years, and he's celebrating just the fact that, hey, I have an ERA of 4.5 this start. That's ridiculous. Giolito was horrible. Like you said, Jim, the fact that he is rolled out every fifth day, it's getting to the point where it's ridiculous. He has two good pitches, and that's pretty much what he's been rocking with his whole career, and it worked for him in the past. But when we're talking about the past, we're talking about ancient history. 2021 was the last time that Giolito was a real good pitcher. Every year after that, he was getting banged up, and even when he was healthy, he was getting knocked out of the game. It's ugly stuff. And you pair it with Fitz melting down the other night. I understand they rushed him back, but Dobbins getting pushed to the pen. What? Because you're afraid that this kid, this rookie, has troubles two times through the order, three times through the order? Well, guess what? He's been pretty good for the first time through the order. Giolito has struggled even with that. It's just ridiculous. And tonight we had Bernie and Weissert go out there, and both of them looked ugly. These are two guys that have been good all year, and we are just taxing them. These poor relievers. I'm wondering, why not go to Criswell early on? I thought this was going to be another no-show game for him, and I was like, is this guy getting the Drew Pomeranz treatment? He came out at the end of the game, looked decent. I was expecting a Guerrero-Criswell outing, and we didn't get that, and thankfully we won. But if not, we would be in an ugly loss with a day off tomorrow to recuperate, but a pen that's been overused and would have been used up tonight, was used tonight, really.
Well, the other thing about Giolito is, you know, look at a little bit at his contract. He's got a two-year deal for $38.5 million, and he has a guaranteed option that will kick in, I believe, after 140 innings. So he's currently at 33-plus innings. You figure roughly 100 games left, five innings of games, 20 starts, another 100 innings onto his belt. You're getting into that 130-inning mark range. I have to assume that the Red Sox are going to watch that like a hawk, because they'd be stupid to let him go and kick in that 140-inning mark to be able to guarantee that $19 million salary. So they've got to watch that. But, I mean, regardless of that fact, if he was pitching well, you wouldn't mind. But there's really no, there doesn't seem to be anything that he's gaining on his pitching that shows you any indication that he's working through, coming back from his injuries and so forth. But even if he is, are you and I say this every time I'm on, are you trying to win or not? Because in my mind, you don't keep putting a guy like that out every 5 days if you're really wanting to win. He's not going to give you the innings nor the quality start that you need. And 6 innings, 3 runs, 4.50 ERA is a quality start. You can't even get that from half of this rotation. So they better figure out something quick, you know. And onto the offensive side of things, you know, like I had mentioned, it's a fool's gold home run. Okay, rah, rah, they won the game. A lot's going to be said in the next 9 games, right? You're facing the Yankees and you're facing Tampa Bay, and then you got Seattle. You know, San Francisco might be a little bit of a hard call right now. They're making moves. They're DFAing a few of their guys. But this will be interesting of how they handle this. Another 6 or 8 games could be a big difference in how they are in the standings and whether you're going to even be a buyer or a seller. Right now, I'm leaning towards them being a seller. This has been a disappointing season. I think there was a lot of high hopes, especially for a lot of the fans. I was not one of them. I will say that from the beginning. I called 78 wins back in February and March, and I'm sticking with it. But with that being said, you have Meyer up here. You sit him for a couple games. What are you doing? Are you going to play this guy or not? You didn't bring him up here to be a platoon player. You didn't bring Campbell up here to be a platoon player. I'm really worried that these guys are going to get exposed as not being the top three guys in the organization. Anthony, you know, we still don't know, but at least for these two guys, they're not handling either one of them correctly. And it really worries me because I worry about their being able to handle the pressure. And if you're not going to play the kid, then bring him down back to the minors and keep with Toro or whatever. But you can't have him sit 2 games in a row.
You know, the thing, well, that's all. We all remember that there was a time with Giolito we were worried about him opting out. How laughable is that at this point? But this pitching staff in general, like, I didn't think it could get any worse than the last couple of years. We added Garrett Crochet to this team and Walker Buehler, and it is worse now than it was last year. Like, Giolito starts, to your point, Jim, if he was your fifth starter, heck, even if he was your fourth starter, we could live with it if we had 3 or 4 legitimate starters. This team right now is literally Garrett Crochet willing us to, I mean, let's face it, a 500 record for him, because in half the games he pitches, we can't even hit the damn ball. And everyone else is abysmal. I mean, we've got Bayo taking little league laps because he's a sub 4 ERA or sub 5 ERA going 6 innings. Whoopity-doo. You know, I feel bad for Dobbins and I feel bad for Fitz, because Fitz has shown us something, but he seems to be injury prone at this point, at least this season. And then Dobbins, for whatever reason, we don't want to trust him because he can't, to your point, Nick, get through the second or third time through a major league lineup when we have pitchers on this team that can't get through batting practice, let alone the first time throughout the order. It is so infuriating and frustrating, because even a game like today, you know, they would get the lead, it'd be gone in a second. They'd tie the game, they give up the lead. And then, you know what, we're going to go through a stretch in the next couple of weeks, probably against good teams, we're not going to be able to hit the ball. And maybe we're going to give up only 2 or 3 runs. And if we're playing the Angels, we win. But then when it is the Angels, we lose. It makes no sense. This team has me in my own mind like Jekyll and Hyde. Like, I don't know what the heck to think, because it has gone on way too long to this point. And I recognize, yeah, the Sox probably aren't listening to us. But I pray to God that someone, whether it's a family member, one of them by accident catches this, because they need to realize that this is, like, beyond out of control at this point. We are the Boston Red Sox, okay? And it has been too many seasons of this dismal bullcrap selling us hope, whether it's through prospects or, like, a signing here or there. we need to like get back to playing Major League Baseball. Okay. You even look at like last night's game, right? At what point do we lay down a bunt and just move the guy in extra innings from second to third and take a crack at just making contact and getting him over? No, we have to get two immediate outs and then pray to God someone hits a single. I don't know what the manager's doing. I don't know what the hitting coach is doing. I don't know what the pitching coach is doing on this team. I don't know what anyone's doing. And I'm almost done at that point mentally with this team. I hate to say it.
Yeah. We've been talking both on air and off air, saying that this is the type of year that gets a lot of people fired. And right now, the general room temperature reading of Red Sox Twitter, even a lot of people in broadcast, you see frustrations growing. You see it in the organization with Cora. You see it outside of the organization. As anyone with eyes and a voice will tell you, this team is an ugly product right now. You know, to your point, Chris, this team has in the past had horrible stretches at the plate where it looks like, you know, we can't buy a run. This series, that wasn't the issue. A lot of people swinging the bats well. Duran, Devers continue to be anchors. Abreu tonight was very, very nice to see him striking the ball well. He ended up getting two hits. Of course, then Rob Refsnyder came in to pinch hit for him. Went hitless, by the way. Didn't get on base. Narvaez continues. Meyer, who is finally back in the lineup, as he should be, looking smooth on defense. And I believe it was in that first inning, that big rally, he worked, or took, really, bases loaded, no outs, walk, I believe it was. And I loved that because I was thinking to myself, a rookie coming up here, as I've been saying, maybe he's going to try to do too much. Is he going to shoot for a grand slam when a walk is fine, a single is fine? Just don't bat into a double play. That's pretty much the worst case scenario in that situation. He was patient. He was poised. A lot of people are talking about it as they have been. I love this kid. I love this guy. I want to see more of that. Rafaela with his third home run on three straight days. Mickey Mouse or not, pesky pole home runs count just the same. David Hamilton swinging the bat well. I don't know why Trevor Story pinch hit for him. On any other day, that pretty much would have been selling a penny for a penny. And today, it was really selling a penny for nothing. You know, you had Hamilton finally swinging the ball well with two hits, two RBIs. Christian Campbell was dancing around the box a little bit. I think he got hit either once or it might have been twice, actually. He was getting a little battered up in the box. But the bats looked good. And it's the type of thing where I want to say, like, oh, maybe this offense can start clicking. But even if it does, which I don't have faith in it doing, I do expect the strikeout, stupid mistake type of stuff to come back into play with us going forward, us getting exposed again on that front. But does it matter if you're scoring five runs, six runs a game, if your pitching staff is giving up 7, 8, 9? The answer is no, it doesn't matter. A loss is a loss.
Yet, real quick, you made a good point that I forgot about, Nick. Campbell, I've noticed in this series in particular, they've been pitching him high and tight. And it's definitely gotten him uncomfortable to the point where when he gets a ball that's closer, like if he does get hit by one, it definitely messes with him inside the box in future at bats. And I noticed that in this series. And, you know, you made some good points about Meyer. And I think the biggest concern that I have, and I've noticed this the last couple of years as prospects come up, right, is, yeah, they talk about how we preach the analytics and all the numbers down in the minors, which is, you know, there's truth and there's positive things to that in today's modern MLB. However, my question is, are they teaching them how to play baseball? Are they teaching them the fundamentals that, regardless of what age of baseball it is, leads to winning long term? And that's the thing I think I question the most, and it's probably the most frustrating, because if it's not happening down there and I'm watching it in the MLB level, it's not happening up here. Where is it and when is it going to happen?
Just a quick thing on Crochet. I just want to let you guys hear this. So if Crochet was not on this team this year, and you took his innings pitched and his ERA out of the equation, the Boston Red Sox would be exactly 24th in team ERA out of 30 teams. That puts them behind the Chicago White Sox, who are one of the worst teams ever on the planet, and behind the Los Angeles Angels, who just took 2 out of 3 from you. So Crochet alone makes a huge difference. With that said, the other thing that I wanted to talk about too with the offense, and I brought this up, I think, a couple days ago, and just in case there's different listeners, my concern for this team moving forward is not even what's going on this year, but what the short future looks like. For many years, we were told Cassis is coming, Cassis is coming. And we banked on that, right? Then it was the big four, the big three, and so forth. And now that you've got a couple of these guys here, the reality is, in this offseason coming up, you got a lot of free agents, you got a lot of expiring contracts. And one of the things that I mentioned over the last 4 or 5 seasons was that every offseason we had to find 6, 7, 8 players. This is going to be a problem again, because if Bregman should opt out, which we hear he's doing better than he expected, you got Giolito's a free agent, Walker Buehler's a free agent, Chapman's a free agent. The guys that are still going to be here, the Durans, the Rafaelas, the Abreus, are any of these guys really taking a step forward? In other words, if you look back at the pre-2018 Red Sox, we saw signs of improvement year in, year out. And the players, the Mookie Betts, the Xander Bogarts, the Jackie Bradleys, they all seem to, for the most part, improve and get better over the course of that 3 or 4 year window. I don't see that happening really with anybody here. You know, Connor Wong has regressed. Jaron Duran is not having the same type of season he had last year. Rafael is about the same in my eyes. Same with Abreu. So I really worry about the fact that 2026 could be a bad year too. And if they don't hit on these three kids, boy, is that going to be a problem. And here's a question to ponder. If Dave Dombrowski was still here, would any of these guys still be on the roster? And I'm talking about Casas, Meyer, Campbell, Teal. I know he's not here, but bear with me. Roman Anthony. Would any of them be here? And the players that we would have acquired for their trade, would we have another title by now since 2018? Because I think Dave would have made it.
Well, I certainly think that in an Elseworld sort of thing, he could have taken that 2021 squad and found a way to build that into a contender. Because, you know, we've talked about how frustrating it is to watch so many pitchers this year, because we looked at the starting rotation. We thought it was deep. At the start of the year, we looked at the names. We said, oh, wow, we have 10 guys who are pretty good starters. We can make a great rotation out of this. And almost everyone's regressed, it seems, in some way, except for Crochet, who wasn't even in our system. We let Sale go for basically nothing. We paid him to go win a Cy Young for the Braves. We let Pivetta go, and now he's pitching well for the Padres. I'm not sure how he's doing this month, but I know he started out the season red hot. We let Eovaldi go, who's doing fantastic work for years and years now with the Rangers. And you just look at all of the great talent we let go, and I hate to harp on about it, but it's time to go back to the Mookie Betts trade. Again, it's not going to die now that we've seen how that's panned out. It didn't. We just let talent go. And I agree with you, Jim, that we are in this mode now of relying on these rookies to be the next Mookie Betts. But what about the Mookie Betts we have? We want Bayo to take a step forward to become the next Chris Sale or Hauk. is a more apt comparison. I know his delivery was very similar to a different handed Sale. What happened to the Chris Sale we had? You know, it's just ridiculous. When you make trades, you want to win. And it seems like we've been on the losing end for a little while now. It's getting ridiculous. They were just talking about some of the guys the Angels added to their roster from us trading them. And they were all, you know, Rule 5 eligible guys at the end of the year. But we gave up like four or five quadruple A sort of depth pieces for some reliever. I don't even remember which one it was, but he didn't pan out last year. And I'm pretty sure he's not even in the organization now. It's just getting ridiculous. It really is. Campbell, to his credit, he's leading the league amongst rookies in walks. That's something. But you're right that he's looked uncomfortable there. It seems like we've thrust this thing upon him. And now that we've angered Devers, the question is, if Bregman does opt out, would Devers even be willing to go back to third base? Because it looks like he was so resistant. He's like a kid who doesn't want to get into the bathtub. And then when he's in the bathtub, he doesn't want to get out. You know, he didn't want to let go of that glove. And now that it's out of his hands, he wants nothing to do with it.
Nick, I want to just interject for a second based on something you said. You brought up Chris Sale. You brought up Eovaldi. You brought up
Pivetta.
Pivetta, thank you. You ever notice that these guys have all left the organization and have excelled?
Oh, yeah.
So why is that? Quinn Priester is also looking pretty good for Milwaukee. Why have they excelled when they've left the Red Sox organization? Can someone answer that question? We have the pitching gurus in Breslow and Bailey. Why are these guys doing better when they've left the organization?
It's a question that needs to be addressed. It needs to, you know, they need to look in the mirror and ask themselves that, because it's becoming laughable at this point. The run prevention unit that was hyped up. And, you know, I think it was you, Jim, who mentioned on Twitter the Trevor Story's defensive boot camp. It's getting ridiculous. It really is. It's not working.
You know, the truth is we do nothing right at this point. And I hate to say it that way, but it's the truth. Because, and I'll get to your question that you asked, Jim, because I think there's a lot of poignant points to make there. But, and I hate to bring it up, but we'll go back to the Mookie Betts trade. Like, and I've joked around in the war room, right? Because I'm one of the guys where I'm saying, like, I don't care about the kids. Get rid of them. Go trade for Paul Skeens if he's available. I don't care. We could only hope that one of these three kids is 70% of what Paul Skeens is today in the major leagues, let alone we're banking on all three of them being 110% of what Paul Skeens is. But, and we're like, we're having these conversations, we're like, is that going to be enough? We traded away a generational player in Mookie Betts and got nothing. Nothing. These guys, like Verdugo was, out of all of them, was the most productive over that time period. But Jeter Downs, the only thing good is that he had the name Jeter in it. And I hate saying that as a Sox fan, but like, let's be honest. And then Connor Wong, the ghost of Mookie Betts. Like, okay, great. So I don't even have confidence we could pull something off, even though that's what I would vote to do at this point. But we're ruining the kids we have. And to your point, Jim, is anyone going to be better? Devers is only going to get worse with age. Like, let's just be honest. As good as he is, he's like anyone else. He's going to become a DH. He's going to break down. He's going to get bigger. He's probably going to get a little more sloppy. He'll still run to a ton of home runs. DH should preserve him a little bit more. I don't even want him back at third base, even if he would go. Bregman, I feel so bad for him coming to the Red Sox at this point. I will literally drive him to the airport for his next contract, because as much as I would love to have him, he doesn't deserve this. He's a winner, and we're not winners right now. So let's get that out of the way. And then Rafaela, I just think Rafaela is what he is. He might get marginally better, but not to where it's going to be a huge difference to wins and losses. Duran, he's a guy where he's a ticking time bomb. Like, he's an hourglass flipped over. He's only going to get worse, and that's not because he's a bad player. It's just his skill sets are only going to get worse as he ages. So with every passing season, he's not going to get marginally better, right? Like, that's just the law of averages at this point. And I think to myself, the kids should be getting better. But the only way you get better when you're a kid is when you make mistakes, and then you learn from them. But our manager won't let them make mistakes. He doesn't play them. He platoons them at best. And then he confuses them. pick up that glove, go play that position. Nope, you're doing this one. Nope, you're doing this one. Nope, you're doing that one. Oh, just kidding. So, and then we have one knocking on the door, and it's like, is someone at the door? I think I hear something. Nope, it's not the pizza I just ordered. So we do everything wrong, Jim. The truth is we're not going to get better.
Chris, here's the other part of it too. You know, you talk about bringing these kids up, and my concern is that you do not have the veteran talent on this organization to right the ship of these kids. And I don't want to say chicken and beer part two, but who is taking Meyer under his wing? Who's taking Campbell under his wing? Romy Gonzalez? Jaron Duran Effem? Sadon Rafaela? Who's the veteran presence here that is helping them? Bregman's the new guy in town. I'm sure he's still doing something, but he's also injured right now. So I have a hard time finding who's setting the example here. Outside of Story, the problem is the guy can't hit and he can't field anymore. So I worry about how these kids are going to age during this prime time of their career. Their first one, two, three, four seasons are a really adolescent period of baseball time. And they need to be molded to what it's like to win and win here. And they don't have winners. Costas is not a winner. Like you said, Chris, I think a couple weeks ago, these guys are losers. And it's not to be mean. It's the facts of their record. Right. Since Tristan Costas has been here, this team has not been over 500 for more than 2 weeks. Where is the winning going to be? I'll never forget when the Red Sox signed Johnny Gomes, when we got that crew in 2013.
Shane Victorino.
Mike Napoli. Okay. It was spring training. Johnny Gomes is stretching in the backfield. They asked him, he says, what's your prediction for the season? And he said, a championship. The confidence just oozed out of these guys. Whether they produced or not, I mean, Johnny Gomes wasn't a 350 hitter with 25 home runs, but it was just that the air, the aura, the oozing of confidence that you don't see on this 2025 team, and you haven't seen it for years.
Yeah, no, I mean, they were all misfits, that 2013 team, but they all came from winning cultures. They were not the guy on their teams, but they were one of the guys. And that's a distinct difference between now and then. But I think to both of your points, Nick, you kind of hit on this already or started to touch on it, is let's just say these guys do pan out. When it's time to pay them, then what? Right. Unless we could snag them on these Rafaela deals, which, let's face it, we're more than likely not going to be able to pull off, because when we do sign these guys to those deals, they don't turn out very good. So Mayer, Anthony, what? And then they become the next Mookie Betts, and then we're just rinse and repeat. Something has to change, and it starts at the top. It's this organization systemically is rotten.
I agree. It's what we've been saying, you know, it's ridiculous. You have these expectations for these kids. And let's say, like you said, let's say they pan out. Then what? Do we really expect to breed a team of 26 super soldiers to head out there and win a World Series? That's not how it works. And it's never how it's worked. You need to supplement the talent you have with the talent you can afford to get, either by trading resources for them, i.e. players, or by signing guys. This is just getting untenable. It really is. The biggest leadership you do have in the room, I agree, it's Trevor Story. It's a guy who shouldn't even be on the roster right now. It's a guy who's losing us baseball games outside of, you know, two or three nice performances he's had all year. It's ridiculous. And back in 2018, you did have guys like Xander Bogaerts sort of passing the torch onto a guy like Devers. But Devers, I love the guy as a hitter. He's a top five hitter in baseball. Hopefully he will be for a few years. You never know when that's going to wash up, but he's not the leadership type. So what do you have? You have a bunch of guys where, and Jim, you were right. It's about demeanor sometimes. There's an old adage in baseball that's very true. It's not about having the best 26 players. It's about having the right 26 players. You want to get a good clubhouse, a clubhouse that has a winning culture that pushes itself. I want to see more JD Martinez's who are going over to guys saying, hey, I noticed something in your swing. Let's work on this. I want more Chris Sales who lose their minds and say, what are we doing, guys? We got to wake up. I want more spark plugs. I want more freaks. Love him or hate him, Papelbon was a force of nature. Kurt Schilling was a force of nature. Pedro Martinez, as nice as he is off the field, on the mound, he was a force of nature. These guys were vicious. They had an edge. You don't see that with guys like Casas. You really don't. And it is just getting to a point where I love the steps forward that Rafaela has taken. I do see value in him. I see Abreu starting to, you know, put some pieces together. But ultimately, these are all very young guys, even with Rafaela, even with Abreu. These are guys who are just in their, what, third seasons? They're still green. They're still learning themselves. They can't be the ones to actually come in and establish an order because they are the ones who would reap the benefits of an order. And if it's not coming from Cora, and if it's not coming from Fatsy, and it's not coming from Bailey, and it's not coming from any guy on the team worth his salt, what's it coming from?
But before we get into the next series, I'm going to leave you at this point because there's a lot of Red Sox fans, including people on our team, that are scared to say this, but I'm not. When you really look at Rafael Devers, okay, and you look at his career, when it's been just Rafael Devers is not a winner. He's good individually, but it's since you lose Bogarts, he's not. Because Bogarts took over that transformation from you had but Dustin Pedroia, right? Dustin Pedroia phased out. It clearly became Bogarts was the leader. Since Bogarts left, it was supposed to be Devers' team. He hasn't done much winning since Bogarts isn't here, right? And I love Rafael Devers, and I think he's one of the, he's a top five hitter in baseball. Don't get me wrong. I'm not crapping on the guy. But he's not a winner. Not at this point. Not without the right team around him. He hasn't done much winning since 18. He had that 2021 season, but Bogarts was on that team. So the reality is there's a lot of question marks. There's a lot of problems with this team, a lot specifically with the players. To me, when you have that many question marks with the players, though, it starts with leadership. Because bad leadership or the right leadership will turn guys that are kind of okay or question marks into sure things. So,
and leadership is something that you can change a lot easier. I think that anyone who has watched the sport of baseball or any sport long enough, you recognize how quickly cultures can turn around. Good situations become bad situations become good situations. But ultimately, what you need to do is you need to change. And, you know, to your point, talking about winners and whatnot, look back to 2021. I don't know for you guys who the mascot is for that team, the guy whose face comes to mind. But for me, funnily enough, it's Kyle Schwarber.
Schwarber, 100%.
Yeah, it's a guy we got halfway through the year, and we let walk after that. And look at what a mistake that was.
Who signed him?
The Phillies.
Dave Dombrowski.
Yep. Exactly. It's ridiculous. So you guys have anything else, or you want to move on to probable pitching?
Uh-huh. Yeah, next series.
Let's look forward at this wonderful 15-game stretch. And honestly, everyone watching or listening, this is the stretch to keep your eyes on because this sets the tone for the rest of the season pretty much. This next 15 games, you got six versus the Yankees with the Rays right in between, and then you've got the Mariners and the Giants. The Mariners right now, 4-6 in their last 10, but 32-27 on the season. You never know what's going to happen there. The Giants, 3-7 in their last 10, but 33-28 on the season. So these are good rosters. We'll see what happens when we get to them. But the Yankees and the Rays are red hot right now, and they're right in front of us. So this 15-game stretch, this is either going to be the death blow that makes us just completely lose hope, sends the Red Sox into a spiral, or I mean, this team has a chance to shove all of our words down our throats, and I will gladly eat them if we can eke out. I mean, if we can win 10 out of these next 15, that would be a Christmas miracle. I don't think it's going to happen. It starts against the Yankees. Although MLB right now doesn't have any probable pitchers, most likely it's going to be Walker Buehler versus Will Warren. That's going to be a 7 o'clock game on Friday the 6th. We have Garrett Crochet versus Ryan Yarbaugh, and that's going to be on the 7th at 7:35 p.m. Eastern. And then it is Hunter Dobbins, who is getting another start, thankfully, versus Carlos Rodon. This is going to be tough. Yarbaugh and Rodon are very good pitchers this year. Warren, we can hit this guy. We can hit this guy, but he strikes a lot of guys out. And you know what this offense likes to do best. You guys have any predictions going into this? How do you think it's going to look?
If they win anything, they win the Crochet game. Mic drop. That's it.
Yeah. And the whole 15, right?
pretty much. I mean, Crochet is also going to pitch on the 13th, in Fenway Park. I think that's in Fenway Park. Is that one? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, that's about it. You know, I don't have any faith in anybody else. I mean, Dobbins has been adequate, but the problem is that they're going to just do enough to lose, and that's really going to be the problem.
Yeah. I think, I mean, let's face it, the Yankees, so many people, oh, their pitching's going to catch up to them. They're tied for the third best record in the MLB, right? Out of this 15-game stretch, granted, I don't know all the matchups, and that will play a very small role, but knowing this team, the way that they find ways to lose, I don't even know how much that really matters. They will be lucky to win 5, to go 5-10 on this stretch, the way that they've been playing. I fully expect them to more than likely get swept by the Yankees. I mean, we took one against the Angels because we just happened to win a shootout that ended on a pesky pole home run.
Yeah, Yarbaugh and Rodon, very, very good this year. Will Warren strikes a lot of guys out. Some control issues, some hard hit ball issues. I think I'm feeling optimistic in saying we're going to win one of these games. The Yankees are a very complete team. You hate to admit it, but they're good. They're good. They can hit and they can throw. And at the end of the day, that's what matters the most. I'm not sure what one I would call. I mean, we have a chance to get to Will Warren, but I agree. I think Crochet on the mound gives us our best chance to win. Poor Dobbins, man. Talk about a trial by fire. All right, you're back in the rotation. Go get him, kid. Aaron Judge and whatnot. It's ridiculous.
Well, and the thing is, too, is like at some point, like Garrett Crochet, how much does it weigh on you to just know you have to be perfect every start? Like, think about, you know, the other Garrett, the one who's not, that I wish was pitching, crazy to say, Garrett Cole, right? Like, the guy's a horse. And, I mean, the Sox own him, but, like, he would have a stinker every so often. The difference is when he'd have a stinker, didn't completely derail their season because he's not the only guy on that pitching staff. But, like, Garrett Crochet is due to get lit up at some point. And does it make him a bad pitcher? It's like everyone has a bad start. The problem is if he has a bad start, like, it literally ends your season if you're a Red Sox player or a fan in our case.
Yeah, and these are we're actually going to get two nationally televised games here too. It looks like the Crochet-Yarbaugh matchup on the 7th is going to be on Fox, and Dobbins versus Rodon is going to be on ESPN.
Oh, God.
So the world. That's a lot of pressure. All right. We can wrap it up there. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We have been the Bastards of Boston. Remember, bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles. Keep on venting your frustrations and keep on letting your voices be heard, because this team cannot keep getting away with mediocrity and then some. I've been Nick the Voice. We'll see you next time.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.